Welcome to Canuck as a Slur, a podcast about cool, cursed, curious, cringe, clubbing, cranky, car jumping, kid friendly, constitutional, Quebec, and Quebecois Canadian culture and history. I am Kelly, and my guest today, by virtue of being both a hockey fan and an Armenian citizen, is automatically listed as a third stringer on the Armenian national ice hockey team by default. From the Lions Led by Donkeys podcast, it's Joe Kasabian. How are you doing today?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm doing all right. It is ungodly early for me. It's nearly 1 p.m.
So you're the one operating under Armenian time today.
Yeah, very much so. And kind of every day, but...
Fair enough. You know, if I was old enough back in the day when Armenia was doing its like really corrupt national hockey team, I probably could have been on the team. Like, I can ice skate. I know how to play hockey. Am I particularly good at either of those things? Nope. But I am overqualified because I am an Armenian citizen. So I got that going for me.
Okay, so that leads into the question that I had, which is, because I know you've talked about being a hockey fan before.
Yeah.
Like, did you ever play like in an organized way, or you just mostly watched?
I mean, I mostly watched. I played all the way up through high school. I wasn't very good. I mean, obviously, it's not like I played in university or anything. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I played defense all through high school. I started peewee hockey. Oh, no, not peewee. What's below peewee? I don't remember anymore. Is it?
I don't know if you had the same naming schemes as we did.
We might, because Michigan's close enough to Canada.
Well, so we had this weird system that it was like every 2 years was a... Well, that was the normal part, right? It separates by ages. It was like 2 years of each, and they were all named after small things. So the lowest one was called Tom Thumb. That's like first and second grade. And then you had Novice, which is not actually about size, just kind of... different direction. Then you had Adam, like A-T-O-M.
Yeah.
Small. Then you had Pee-wee, which was, so at that point, that's when like from when I was doing it, that's when you started hitting, but they pushed that back.
Yeah, yeah. We could hit in Pee-wee as well. But this is, I'm almost 37, so that was a long time ago.
And then it was Bantam, another small thing. And then it was Midget, which is one of the reasons they changed those.
Yes, that is the same system that we have. Yeah, I was curious if they still call it that.
They started renaming it to like U20 and stuff in like 2020 or something. Like, it's way later than you might think.
Yeah, I played, I mean, I didn't have money, and obviously hockey is something of a privileged sport, depending on where you're coming from, of course. Some places have better programs, and I'm from the United States, and we absolutely don't. But I had a very rich uncle, and this is the only thing that my mother let him give us money for. So shout out to my uncle so I could get, you know, pads and sticks and ice time and whatnot. I still wasn't very good. So maybe his hopes of me achieving any sort of heights with my athletic ability, I faltered.
So when I invited you on for this episode, I asked if you wanted to talk about a specific hockey riot, and your immediate response was, it's the punch-up, isn't it? For starters, what do you know about the punch-up?
I really don't know much. I know about it, of course. I don't know many... I'm sure there's some hockey fans that don't know a lot about it. I know about it as far as, like, there was a big fight between the Soviet Union and Canadian teams to the point that they had to turn the lights off to get them to stop fighting, and people... have a tendency of blaming the fight on Soviet misunderstanding of North American hockey and how hitting and fighting worked. I don't know how true that is, but I've certainly heard it.
Awesome. We're not talking about that today. You guessed wrong.
Fuck. I didn't know there was another hockey riot. Like, that's the only one I could think of.
Oh, no. Yours was an on-ice riot is the one you picked.
True, true, true.
So we have a topic that sits at the intersection of your old reliable friend, the game of hockey, and your hated arch nemesis, the French language. That's because we're going to cover the Richard riot. Are you familiar with this?
Not at all.
Oh, man. Hell yeah. The pronunciation is important because the Richard riot is not to be confused with Richard Riot Jayem, a Malaysian politician who has nothing to do with this story.
Sick name, though.
Yeah. That's why I had to include it.
It sounds like either he has the coolest parents on earth or he's a hair metal band.
To understand how and why this event went down, we first have to understand who Maurice Richard was. You're familiar with Maurice Richard, at least on a name basis?
Yes.
Joseph-Henri Maurice Richard, who went by Maurice, is also not to be confused with his brother Joseph-Henri Richard, who went by Henri, because if there isn't a Joseph somewhere in your name, are you really even French-Canadian?
Is that a stereotype? I'm unaware of that.
Well, we're gonna find out. But like my grandpa was French-Canadian, and this is outside of Quebec, this is in Alberta, but his middle name was Joseph, so It's in there.
I mean, unfortunately, I have to fall onto the side of the French Canadians this one as someone whose first name is Joseph and whose grandfather is French.
You're going to be among friends in this episode. Well, Maurice Richard is an iconic figure in hockey history for a few reasons. One of them is pretty straightforward. He scored a lot of goals. This is him scoring his 500th goal.
And hockey players looked so much cooler back then.
Oh, my God. The whole era, there's no ads on the boards. Like, obviously the no helmets are bad, but you get the expressions. Just a lot of, like, simple, clean uniforms.
Just slicked back hair. They all look like they could take off their pads and immediately just go be gangsters, which some of them almost certainly did.
The crowds
look like they're photoshopped in because nobody's wearing a jersey. I don't think you could buy one yet. Everybody's still, like, a suit and tie and everything. Absolutely incredible. Everybody in this picture died from head injuries, probably.
For one thing, with the amount of pomade that some of the, like, I think especially Richard is using, like, maybe that is a bit of a helmet.
Yeah, for sure. And, you know, goalies without any masks on either. Famously,
incredible
Terry
stuff.
Sawchuk is an absolutely ugly man due to having his face pounded in by pucks.
Yep. Something that tends to be confusing for non-hockey fans is that when we're talking about individual player stats, scoring goals does not mean the same thing as scoring points. Points are the combined total of your goals and assists. And the combined total is generally considered the main metric for a really good offensive player. To give a really simple example for the audience, let's say Joe and I are playing hockey on a team. Joe picks up the puck behind our net, carries it himself the length of the ice, and draws several defenders over toward him as he enters the other team's zone. He makes some very fancy moves to step around them and, using his excellent situational awareness, notices his idiot line mate, me, wide open in front of their net. I have drifted there mostly by accident and am currently distracted by a pretty lady in the crowd. So Joe snaps the puck powerfully and accurately on his backhand into my shin pad, bouncing it past the goalie and into the net. I have scored a goal.
Isn't it great? I don't know if any other sport really works that way when it comes to technically scoring. Maybe maybe soccer. Even though I live in Europe now, I couldn't give a fuck less about football.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure if you pound the soccer ball off someone's face, they get the goal, but I don't know.
Yeah, I have no idea. And also, how many sports is it even possible? Like, you can't, you know, in baseball, you're not going to knock the ball off of someone else and get a home run and have it count for someone completely different.
Mm-hmm.
It's incredible.
I think it's why, like, assists matter in basketball too, right? Because if you send somebody for the alley-oop, like, you can argue you've done the work. I don't know. I don't really know basketball either.
Yeah, that is true. Yeah. And I guess if you threw a basketball with just the right spin on it, it smacked someone off the face and went in, they would get the point. Mm-hmm. It's a lot harder, though.
Yeah. So it doesn't really matter if he hits it on and off my leg, my stick, my ass, my face. I've scored a goal on paper, even though even a casual viewer can tell you that he absolutely put in all of the skill and hard work. And I bring this up because although the NHL has awarded the Art Ross Trophy to the league's regular season scoring leader, that's total points, since 1948, they did not even have a trophy for pure goal scoring until, do you know what year this was?
I have no idea. I kind of assumed that'd be like the first trophy they would give out.
Nope. They came up with that trophy in 1999.
Are you fucking serious?
Yeah. It is named after Maurice the Rocket Richard.
I assume the Rocket award was around for way longer than 1999.
No.
What the fuck?
Yeah.
So is it just kind of like an informal bragging rights thing? Like, I scored the most goals that year. I'm not going to get shit for it. Maybe a league MVP or something. But they didn't have an independent thing?
Kind of, yeah. They obviously kept track of goal records, everything like that. But yeah, there was no trophy for most goals.
That's incredible. That's so strange.
Yeah. The French word for rocket, by the way, is fusée. But they didn't call him La Fusée. They called him Le Rocket, which really speaks to the bilingual context he became famous within. But more to the point, he was considered a pure goal scorer, with an article written after his retirement quoting an unnamed teammate as saying, quote, Maurice wouldn't even pass you the salt, end quote. And a similarly anonymous coach offering the counterpoint, quote, if the Rocket had the puck past center ice, I wouldn't want to see him pass it off unless he just got shot in the heart, end quote.
So he's French-Canadian Alexander Ovechkin.
Yeah, I actually did a comparison of, this gets talked about a lot with pure goal scorers, like, oh, they can't play defense or they can't pass or, you know, all these kind of elements of discourse. And I was thinking, like, I want to look at a ratio of assists to goals. And I don't remember the exact number anymore, but Richard's is very close to what Ovechkin's is. I think Richard's is a bit higher. Mike Bossy was also similar when I checked. Maybe Bobby Hull. And I checked Pavel Bure, too. I think he had the highest, but...
That's not surprising.
They're all in that range, yeah.
And there's some players that notoriously couldn't give a fuck less about anything other than the offensive. Like Alexander Semin comes to mind.
Hmm.
But he was also really well known for being just lazy. On the back check and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, that will get leveled at people too.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, there's a reason why he's kind of struggled to make it, even on the same line as Alexander Ovechkin. Like, he still had a hard time, like, keeping his job, which is incredible.
He also had one of the world's funniest fights. But the writer of this piece also analogized the combination of goals with assists in hockey to a hypothetical baseball stat combining home runs and bunts, which is not correct and was infuriating to read printed in a major American newspaper.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know how you'd compare something in baseball.
You can. Yeah. They're different sports. They're way different sports. For the non-sports heads in the audience, baseball is very different from hockey and most sports.
You might know it better as honkball hoofdeklasse. The only possible comparison I could think of is the dumbest fucking thing on earth when it comes to baseball. It's like if you gave an assist to the pitcher if someone hit a home run off of them.
Yeah. No, literally. Because you can't score a goal without a pitch you could hit. Yeah, it's you often. Right. My sources inform me that in baseball, this is called a home run. Whatever. You often can't score a goal without a good pass. Obviously, there are unassisted goals, but... Anyway, there is discourse around assists and stuff and whether secondary assists count, and that is not what we're here to do today because much of the audience is really not sports people, so.
I mean, of course, I guess I have to have an opinion on that. Like, of course secondary assists should count. It shows you that, like, your team is good at moving the puck quite simply. Yeah.
So, I don't know if you were kind of in the online spaces when advanced stats were really taking off and people would be using all these, like, advanced statistical processes to try and, like, assess what is actually, like, a good statistic and what isn't.
Like hockey sabermetrics.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the quality measures people would use is, like, is this a repeatable skill? And I can't remember the details anyway, but a lot of people would make the argument that a primary assist is a repeatable skill, whereas much as, a, like, just an individual player stat. And the secondary assist, that's, like, the person who passed to Joe, who then shot it off me in that scenario, that is much more luck-based, right? Like, because goalies get a lot of those.
Sure. I mean, goalies also score goals from time to time, but it's certainly not repeatable for most of them, so should we just not give them goals? If they score, just give it to someone random who's, like, on a dry spell?
I mean, ultimately, I think it only matters that much in the context of when people are building their little models, they'll say, okay, I have built a model that combines a person's goals and primary assists just because I think it's a better metric of their skill. And, like, sure, go ahead. That's your model.
Yeah. And even their model, like, I understand what they're trying to do. I do. Because you can be a guy who maybe isn't the best and get put on the line. You know, if you happen to be some scrub who manages to get on the line with, like, Leon Draisaitl or something, like, your stats are going to be inflated quite a bit, right? Mm-hmm. Like, you're going to be able to cash that for a massive fucking contract in, like, 3 years.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people are trying to find ways around that, and I just don't think you can. There's been multiple people who just aren't great hockey players whose stats absolutely explode because they happen to, like, Pavel Datsyuk was a good example of this. If you put anyone next to him, they would look great.
Oh, yeah. Many such examples.
I mean, that's how Justin Abdelkader got, like, an 8-year contract.
Yes, yeah. Or the David Clarkson one, but
yeah,
we could be here all day on that. Even in youth hockey, Richard was outstanding at putting the puck in the back of the net by himself. As a teenager, he was recruited to play for a local club, which he helped lead to the championship of its small league 3 straight times. The third time out of the team's 144 goals that season, do you want to guess how many he scored?
I have 144.
Yeah.
I'm going to say at least 100.
133.
That's embarrassing. Like, his team should be ashamed of that.
Yeah, I mean, it is probably just like the local boys. Like, he needed better competition, but...
Yeah, he's grown out of his talent pool, especially back then when, like, if your kid ended up being, like, the next crazy thing, no one was, like, packing up their bags and moving to a stronger hockey place, you know?
Well, around this time, I think it's just as he's maybe getting into, like, the junior, like, the NHL farm team, that he's actually playing on multiple leagues, which some of these leagues have provisions against doing. So he's going and playing in separate leagues under the fake name Maurice Rochon, like, and just putting his, yeah, it's very like guy incognito stuff.
Wasn't there a hockey player that didn't exist that the New York Islanders drafted once?
Probably.
Like, yeah, I mean, it is the Islanders. Anything is possible.
Oh, shit, yeah.
It was like a Japanese name.
Yes, it was a fake Japanese name. Fuck, I'll have to edit that in because that was a very funny story. That was the Sabres drafted him.
Oh, it was the Sabres, right? Yeah. I'm sorry. I apologize to all of you poor, suffering New York hockey fans. It really seems like an Islander thing to do.
No, the Islanders were the team that got bought by a pretend owner who didn't have money.
Yes, and they're still paying Rick DiPietro to this day.
Yeah. Richard began his professional career just before the NHL added the red line in 1943 and opened up most of the ice to forward passing. This means that the statistics from this point forward, in general, don't compare well to previous decades. But, all the same, when he entered the league, the NHL record for goals in a season was 44, set way back in 1918.
Wow.
In what may as well have been a completely different sport. Like, this was 44 goals in 20 games. It's just, different number of guys on the ice, everything.
Yeah, and that's why whenever anybody is like, is anybody going to catch up to these old records? Like, probably... fucking not. Like, nobody was really athletic back then. The goalies really sucked.
They were so bad.
I could probably put one past Terry Sawchuk, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, like,
he wasn't
sure,
very
yeah.
good. So yeah. Everybody's totals were way fucking higher.
But at this point, no one had cracked 40 goals in over a decade. Richard netted his record-setting 45th goal only 42 games into his second full campaign and scored in the last game of the regular season for a tidy 50-50. For comparison, the second best goal scorer that year finished with 32. So he's good.
Games must have been really fucking boring back then.
I mean, sometimes.
Like, what if the dead puck era, but nobody was that good of an athlete to really entertain you?
Well, I mean, he's getting a goal a game, so.
Yeah. I mean, if you're a fan of him.
Like, if you scale it to, it's like half the season that we play now at 82, so.
True. Yeah, I mean, that's still impressive.
One of the things his detractors point out was that, given that this was the 1944-45 season, many of his would-be competitors had been off fighting in a major war while he remained.
How did he get away with that?
Wow.
how did he dodge the Conscription Act?
Yeah, so like Canada did have these two Conscription Acts by the end of both wars, and there were huge riots over them in Quebec and French Canada. It's a whole thing. But Richard had shown up to a recruitment office in June of 1941, like, yeah, I'll go to war. But a season-ending broken ankle he'd suffered the previous fall in his very first game for Montreal's minor league affiliate led the military to deem him unfit for service.
Ah, well done.
He tried again the next summer, but that season it had been a broken wrist that had kept him out of the service, even though he'd been able to come back for the playoffs that spring. The next year... his first in the NHL was his third straight season cut short by an injury, this time his other ankle, and the third straight summer he was rejected by the Canadian military.
So he managed to have something busted every time he went to go get conscripted, which isn't that surprising. I mean, he is a hockey player back when pads were probably slightly better than a fucking long sleeve shirt.
Yeah, but he was also considered, even at the time, fragile. There were concerns about his ability to play at this level and stay healthy. And the team had even tried to trade him away to New York at one point.
That's not surprising.
Oh, it's so hard to imagine like it going any other way. But like any era, you know, of the modern era, like people get traded. You can get sent wherever. And so he was.
It must have really sucked back then.
Well, they were like, he's good, but he's never, like, people thought he's never going to stay in the league.
It reminds me, I mean, the all offense, all gas, no break shit is what broke Pavel Bure as well. You know, he just got beaten up from constantly driving to the net.
Yeah. So in that next season he plays, he still goes on to set that single season goal record, and that was one that would stand for 16 seasons. And even then, the 50 goals took 62 games to match. No one else would score 50 and 50 until 1981.
Wow.
In late 1952, Richard set the league record for total career goals, and a year later, he took the lead in total career points. By the time he retired, the same season that Gordie Howe had just passed his all-time point total, he still held the career goals record, he still held that single-season goals record, and he had led the league in goals 5 times to that point. But he never won the overall scoring title, coming in second in that respect 5 times.
Because he never passed.
At least that's the narrative. But also, it sounds like they didn't want him to.
Yeah, I mean, that was his role on the team. They probably didn't expect, you know, the Rocket to quickly back-check people. That wasn't his job.
Yeah.
It's like expecting a goon to set up passes. It's not what they're there for.
Hey, I mean, George Laroc scored a hat trick, but that's off topic.
That's true. And I mean, there's quite a few goons out there who had handles. Mm-hmm. That's for sure. Darren McCarty comes to mind.
Mm-hmm. But that's hockey stat corner. That's why Richard is important as a goal scorer. But not all goal scorers are important cultural figures. As an example, let's examine the history of the all-time goal record. It currently stands at 894, unsurprisingly held by Wayne Gretzky, who, we are required to mention every time he comes up, was at Mar-a-Lago with his family during the evening of November 5th, 2024.
That hurts.
Yeah, it sucks.
I knew that, but every time I see it, it hurts.
Yeah.
He's done a lot of fucking weird shit politically in his life. Also, yeah. Terrible coach. Almost certainly gambled on his own hockey teams.
Sure. Well, you know what? Why not just add to the pile?
Had a hand in killing the Phoenix Coyotes.
Everyone had a hand in killing the Phoenix Coyotes.
Yeah. Especially the last guy whose name is escaping me at the moment. Rest in peace, Coyotes.
As Alexander Ovechkin is rapidly closing in on this goal record, I will also add Ovechkin has shit politics too. This episode was recorded on February 26th, 2025. On April 6th, this happened.
Here is Ovechkin shoots! He scores! He scores! Number 895!
And you can feel however you want to about that.
He sure does. His are a little bit more well-known for obvious reasons.
Yeah, or at least were more well-known.
Yeah, he's always kind of gotten a pass for it. Even after the invasion of Ukraine, everybody's just kind of, he's been insulated.
He gets a pass for it in some spaces, but...
He gets a pass by Caps fans because he is an incredible hockey player, even if he is a shit human being. But even before this, he was kind of... a shit guy, you know. He's kind of slimy.
People who are not like big hockey fans might be surprised to hear that Ovechkin is closing in, that anyone is closing in on Gretzky's all-time goal record, and that just really goes to speak to how much points actually matter in hockey, because Gretzky's points total is unbelievable. Because
it's crazy.
One of my favorite Gretzky facts is he has more assists than anyone else has points.
Yeah. Yeah, he would still be leading if you took away all his goals.
Yeah.
That does bring up a competition, though, in this race. Who do we want to win? Because they're both terrible people. I would rather have Gretzky keep it, personally.
But
he's also a fucking MAGA guy.
I don't like either their politics, so I just do like to watch records get broken, because it just seems so improbable that like he just keeps scoring. Russian machine never breaks.
I'm sure you're like me and like every other hockey fan out there. We all just kind of assume that all of Gretzky's records would just stand because how much hockey has changed.
Mm-hmm.
I would like to see it get broken. I don't know if I want to see it broken by fucking Ovechkin, though.
Yeah, I mean, I would like to see Leon Draisaitl break it, but that's going to be a while.
Or McDavid, I'd be fine with. Literally anyone other than Ovechkin, please.
Yeah. But more to the point, Gretzky had a cultural impact, as did the man he took the record from, Gordie Howe, who beat Richard's total in 1963. By contrast, the player Richard took the career goals record from is a man that no one has thought or cared about since. Do you have any idea who that was?
No.
Nels Stewart, also known as Old Poison for reasons that are a complete mystery to me.
That's a sick fucking nickname, though.
The 30s and like this whole era, they have way better nicknames.
It's even better that we don't know why. You know, it's the 30s, it's professional sports, and professional sports in the 30s was just like a bunch of lads strapping shit on and going out there and fucking each other up. Like maybe he's rubbing cyanide at the end of a stick. Like, oh, there goes Old Poison again.
Yeah, I wasn't surprised. You know, a lot of the kind of top level poking around things here starts for me with Wikipedia before I go find sources.
Sure.
And it's like, oh, okay, well, it doesn't say in Wikipedia, but nobody's writing about this guy. I'm like, somebody has written why his name is Old Poison. And I start looking it up. No, nothing. Just Old Poison.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that are on these teams that we literally know nothing about anymore. Because mm-hmm. professional sports were kind of barely a thing back then.
Oh, yeah. And that's going to factor into why we have many tangents today. Similarly, while Richard's single-season record eventually fell to the unfortunately well-known Bobby Hull, who remained very visible in the hockey world despite the multiple credible allegations of extreme domestic violence.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Oh, boy. The man who surpassed Bobby Hull, in turn, has not had nearly the same kind of staying power in the collective memory of hockey fans. So, single-season record goes from Richard to Bobby Hull, and then before it gets to Wayne Gretzky, it goes through one other player. Do you know who that is? Like, could you guess who that is?
I have no idea.
It's Phil Esposito.
Oh, okay. I know who he is. There's memories of him in the back of my head from, like, NHL 95.
Was he still playing?
No, there's no way he could have been. No fucking way.
But yeah, he's just like, of course, it's a name I've heard, but it's just, he's not like a hockey lore name is what I mean.
No, not at all.
Now, in fairness to Phil, he never once had to, in the words of the LA Times, quote, strongly deny he told a Moscow newspaper that Adolf Hitler had some good ideas and that the U.S. black population was growing too quickly.
Oof.
That's more than we can say for Bobby.
Oh, my God. I mean, he played for Boston for a reason.
Yeah. No, he played for Chicago.
Did Hull? I could have swore Bobby Hull played for fucking Boston. No, that shows me. All right, fair enough.
Mostly Chicago for sure. Because, yeah, he was in the Blackhawks as their ambassador forever. And then the Blackhawks famously never had any major organizational scandals again.
That is true. Yeah, that's fair enough.
And then the Oilers famously never hired one of the main architects of turning the other way. Still mad about it.
Yeah. I'm waiting for something to come out about the Red Wings other than we just suck.
But yeah. Live your life in such a way that nobody ever has to write a headline about you where it says, denies remarks on Hitler, comma, blacks.
What a fucking piece of shit. Yeah. I was wrong. Bobby Hull never played for the Bruins, but he did play for the Winnipeg Jets and the Hartford Whalers. That's punishment enough.
That's right. So, yes, the reasons. There was a riot over Maurice Richard, and the reasons he was voted the 23rd greatest Canadian in the CBC's 2004 contest run much deeper than mere statistics. To help us paint a clearer picture, I want to move on to discuss the team he played for. But first, let's go on a brief and unimportant tangent. When Richard scored his record-breaking 325th career goal on November 1st, 1952, the puck was saved, as it tends to be with milestones. But rather than, I don't know, give it to Maurice Richard, what Montreal's general manager, Frank Selke, did was the next most obvious move. He sent it to someone special. And you guessed it, it's the recently crowned Queen Elizabeth II.
What?
Yeah.
I mean, okay, fair enough. I know Canada's still part of the Commonwealth and all that, but you know the Queen doesn't give a fuck about hockey.
Well, that's what this tangent is about. There was actually a reason for this. A year earlier, then Princess Elizabeth, along with Prince Philip, attended a game between Montreal and New York, in which Richard scored twice and the team won 6-1. The couple was quite taken with the game, and according to one source, Richard in particular. It's not clear if that's just a bit of myth-making, but for what it's worth, on the next royal visit to... Oh, they clicked on the wrong screen. Anyway, that's them on a little stage with the one of the New York players and one of the Montreal players.
God, this makes me hate the Montreal Canadiens even more.
Oh, boy. On the next royal visit to Canada in 1959, the Queen requested that Richard and his wife come meet her in Ottawa, which they did. As recently as 2002, Richard's puck was on display in Buckingham Palace as part of the Queen's Golden Jubilee.
That's crazy, because I've actually, right after the Queen died, I went to London for the first time, and I went through the Crown Jewels Museum thing, whatever it's called, I don't remember. And I don't know if I saw it or not. Granted, I was there with a friend, and I didn't really want to be there because I don't give a fuck about the royal family. Mm-hmm. But I really wish I would have seen the puck now, because it would have looked wildly out of place.
I think it's like a rotational basis, like that they like museum exhibits. That was the phrasing that I got from where I was reading it, that like during the Jubilee, that was one of the things because it commemorated something that actually happened 50 years earlier.
Right.
But apparently, yeah, it's still like in storage in Buckingham. Well, with a few other pucks, I think.
There's got to be a lot of weird shit in there.
Oh, yeah. Despite numerous visits to Canada over the years, the only time afterward that Elizabeth was present for an NHL game also came during the Golden Jubilee, when she performed a pre-game ceremonial puck drop between Mark Naslund, captain of the Vancouver Canucks, and acting captain Mike Ricci of the San Jose Sharks.
That image is just so fucking strange.
It's really good. So for anyone just listening on audio, do you want to describe what we're seeing here?
Okay, you got the Queen puck dropping between two large hockey players, and Wayne Gretzky is watching from behind.
Yeah.
He got some soldiers behind her. Yeah, it's strange. She's dressed up like the Queen as well, with like the nice dress or like pantsuit dress combination. So she looks very out of place.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm thinking of is like, how long is the penalty if someone like slew foots the Queen?
Well, we'll get to that. Sort of. Ricci, who claimed he put in his teeth for the occasion, said, quote, "I was told to wear new gloves in case the Queen wanted to shake hands. She didn't," end quote.
Oh, yeah, because his hands would fucking smell awful.
Yeah.
For people who don't know, hockey equipment smells terrible.
Yeah.
Fucking nuclear bad.
I really shouldn't drop in this story, but my cousin was playing like semi-pro hockey in Denmark. He got slashed really hard on the hand once and had to take like a couple weeks off, and actually like severed his fingertip a little bit.
Oof.
And so when he came back, his glove smelled worse than anything you can ever imagine. And it's because his fingertip had been festering in the glove for 3 weeks.
Yeah. Oh, that's bad. That's bad.
Yeah. So not fit for a queen. The comments from the most people involved were sort of the vague royal praise you'd expect, like Canucks defenseman Ed Jovanovski calling her a sweetheart, and the team's entertainment and events manager, Karen Christensen, saying she had beautiful skin.
That's a weird thing to say about the Queen. Yeah. Like, not a lot of Irish Republicans represented in the National Hockey League, unfortunately.
Well, we'll get to that. Christensen also explained the commemorative puck being signed by everyone involved in the ceremony, but Elizabeth, by stating, quote, "The Queen doesn't sign pucks." Guess that's not surprising.
Hmm. Does she sign anything? Is there like an, does the Queen give autographs? Is the Queen of merch?
I'm guessing no. I'm guessing it's not specific to pucks, but it's just a nice sentence to read.
Yeah, it is funny. I'm feeling it was like one of those things of signing autographs is like below the status of the Queen or whatever.
And a couple fun notes here. So the Olympians, the in the Team Canada jersey staying there, because that was after we'd won the gold medal in 2002.
Mm.
So that's Cassie Campbell and it's Ed Jovanovski. So Jovanovski was playing for the Canucks. So he had to like bail on the end of this ceremony, go get changed while they were warming up, and then come back in his Canucks uniform, like full gear.
Which doesn't make any sense. He could have just been wearing his stuff and standing off to the side, but like, no, you have to be dressed up real nice.
No, he has to wear his gold medal. They couldn't have gotten a different player from the team.
Not at all. No, there isn't like 30 of them.
And also the red carpet pictured here was actually frozen into place as an added precaution that the Queen wouldn't fall on the ice.
Yeah, you don't want to be the guy who accidentally breaks the Queen's hip.
Right. So meanwhile, according to Naslund, quote, "We were told not to skate directly at the Queen."
Someone's going to throw a fucking hip check at Her Majesty.
Yeah. "Speak to her only if spoken to. It was agreed that I'd pick up the puck and give it to her. And we were told there were armed guards in the stands."
Like, as a warning, what is a bunch of, like, and hockey players are generally, as far as, like, North American professional athletes go, some of the nicest dudes out there.
Oh, yeah.
They're also kind of, like, they're so nice, they're boring in many ways, and they're the ones that they're worried about. Is like, no, someone's going to fucking slash the wrist when the Queen goes for the puck, or they're going to pull her shirt over her head and start punching her in the face. Like, come on.
Well, let's read on here, though. The hopelessly hockey-brained in the audience may still be stuck a few sentences back, wondering to themselves, acting captain? Why acting captain? The Sharks would have you believe that this was a fairly typical thing. The captain was injured, so one of the alternate captains took the ceremonial face-off instead. He even got to wear the C on his jersey for the special occasion.
Mm.
But a few pieces of context here. This was a preseason game, and while the club stated that their captain, Owen Nolan, was simply taking the night off with a bad back, it wasn't enough to keep him from playing the night before or out of the season opener a few days later. At least one anonymous source claimed this was pure PR, especially in light of another detail. See, Owen Nolan is a bit of an outlier in the history of the NHL, being born in Belfast, Northern Ireland.
Fuck, Olin Nolan is from Northern Ireland?
Yeah.
I had no idea.
So he grew up and played minor hockey in Canada after coming over as an infant in 1972. Per the Vancouver Sun, quote, since Nolan's family hailed from Falls Road, the Catholic section of Belfast that was at the center of the Troubles, he was firmly in the Republican camp and a staunch anti-monarchist, end quote.
Oh, that's fucking incredible.
This is why I get stuck on tangents. I'm like, I can't not put that in.
That's too good. I've never heard of this.
Him being a staunch anti-monarchist might be a bit of like rhetorical flourish. He's never commented on it. And there's like nothing on his personal life I could find online. It was the team that just said like bad back, he's not playing. But it was a kind of a real like rumor mill open secret.
That's a very hockey player thing, though, is like they never have opinions in public for the most part.
Yeah. So I suspect that the boring real answer is that, you know, his family obviously would have come from Belfast and the Troubles. His family would have had stories for him. His family would have just been like, the Queen sucks, you know, UK sucks, all this sucks. And that was probably enough for him to go as a kid raised in Canada, like going to the team, like, can I just not play this preseason game and just let's just not talk about it? And then, you know, no pot stirring, no arguments with my family. You don't have to be like a Republican to do that.
Sure. Should have hit her with the cross check. That would have been funnier. But well,
with that being said, the funnier thing to imagine, we can't prove this, but it's much funnier to believe that Owen Nolan was making so many threats against the Queen, they had to remove him from the game and then post armed guards and tell people, do not skate directly at the Queen.
His captaincy was cooed for 24 hours.
Yeah. Well, because usually when the captain is out, like they did a recreation of this with Prince Harry, same two teams, like a week ago or something. And the Sharks, again, sent up their alternate captain, but he was just wearing his A. So this was like, we can't have alternate captains in front of the Queen. So you're getting a C for tonight, Mike Ricci.
Yeah, when someone is acting captain, they do not wear a C on their uniform.
Yeah.
Ever.
Getting back on track. For more cultural context on these events, let's get into the Rockets team. Les Canadiens de Montréal, better known to Anglophones as the, Anglophone voice, Montreal Canadiens. First, I'd like to address the name. In a literal sense, the word Canadien is French for Canadian, but it has other strong connotations. The word Canada as a place name dates back to the 16th century when Jacques Cartier, and this is another one of those where the explorer is from a different place, sort of, and they get their, so he got his name francified. He was a Breton, and I do not know how to pronounce Breton's names, but it's like Jacques Carter. I found a Breton speaker on YouTube saying it, so here you go.
Jacques Carter, ou Breton à Bouez, bah, histoire en bed.
Sure.
Yeah.
I'll take your word for it. It's fine with me. You know how much I respect the French language.
But it's the Breton language.
Whatever. Guilty by default.
Yeah, he still led to all this, so. He claimed the area around the St. Lawrence for France, taking a loan word from the Laurentian Iroquois language in the process, being a word meaning village. Not to mention, took one of the Laurentian Iroquois chiefs who he kidnapped and never brought back.
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah. Cartier actually initially applied the term Canadien to refer to the indigenous inhabitants of the area and never settled there himself. You can tell because he never added Joseph to his name.
You got to earn your name if your name is Joseph, I must say.
That's true. So only later did it evolve into a term referring to French settlers. It's hard to say exactly when, but the source I read tracing the evolution of this term broadly paints this transition as taking place across the 17th century, as an increasingly large demographic of French speakers born in the colonies developed a need for a demonym to differentiate themselves from people born back in continental France. A particular example of a distinction being made later on comes from 1734, when one dictionary explained Canadien as referring to French settlers, while Canadois referred to the natives.
Huh. Okay.
Even so, Canadien would have been specific to the French colonial department of Canada, as opposed to, say, the colonial departments of Acadia and Louisiana.
Mm-hmm. I honestly had no idea the whole time watching hockey growing up, the name the Montreal Canadiens, like, well, that's kind of lame. Why don't we just name our team the Detroit Americans?
I mean, there was a New York American, so not
yes,
that
there
far
was.
Off. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is incredibly lame.
And there's still the Rochester Americans.
Yeah. That's the HL team, right?
Yeah.
It's lame. It's super fucking lame. Like if Americans do it, it makes a lot more sense that this team is in Montreal.
Mm-hmm. With France relinquishing its territorial holdings in North America after the Seven Years' War, the connection to the imperial homeland was properly severed, increasing the importance of holding a distinct cultural identity. This led to Francophones in the area then designated as Canada solidifying their place as Canadiens, while Anglophones would still have been considering themselves to be British subjects. While the word Canadien is being used to encompass everyone in British North America, it can be traced as far back as 1792. Canadian did not see widespread use as an English self-identifier even after the Confederation of Canada as an independent, Anglophone-majority dominion in 1867. In fact, as late as 1902, you can get a taste of it from this quote by French-Canadian nationalist Henri Bourassa.
How thoroughly and exclusively Canadian the French Canadian is should never be forgotten by those who contemplate any change in the constitutional or national status of Canada. Toward the Empire, he has no feelings whatsoever, and considers English speakers as only partially Canadianized.
Yeah, I was quite surprised by that.
That's really recently.
Yeah, like the beginning of the 20th century. I should have said this guy's full name. That's French Canadian nationalist Joseph Napoléon Henri Bourassa.
So he's a Joseph and a Napoleon.
He sure is. You get a lot of like Napoleon was my godfather names around this time.
Look, no shade. That's totally fine.
So he was the owner of the French Canadian nationalist newspaper, Le Devoir, which means duty, I believe. That'll come up later.
That's worrying. You hear the words duty and nationalist newspaper and your skin starts to crawl a bit.
Yeah. It was only after the First World War and the participation of a division known as the Canadian Expeditionary Force, later folded into a larger Canadian Corps, where more of a sense of distinct national identity began to form among Anglophones. The solidification of the English language term Canadian would continue after the Second World War, and by the time Maurice Richard retired, the term Québécois was beginning to take hold as a new Francophone self-identifier, at least specific to the inhabitants of Quebec proper. Because there are other French Canadians. It's messy.
Oh, okay. I thought all French Canadians were Quebecois.
No, so there's Franco-Ontarians, so my dad was Franco-Albertan, like they were Francophone community in Alberta for a long time. I know I would have ancestors in Quebec, but it's way far back. Then like you had Acadians, right? Those are people like largely in the Maritimes and stuff, even in Maine.
Right.
Yeah, there's a lot there. But every province in Canada has its own little like flag for its own Francophone community.
Oh, weird. All right.
Yeah, like a lot of, like my dad was raised bilingual. His parents were Francophones. My mom speaks no English. And so like I went to French immersion in school, but basically most of like Alberta French just evaporated in pretty much one generation, so.
I wasn't aware that there was like French speakers in Canada that literally knew no English.
Fuck. Okay. I meant to say French. My mom speaks no French. This led to a slightly confused exchange that took me until now to understand my mistake. So let's just skip ahead a minute to where we got back on track.
Really, the first Quebecois that I ever met were Armenian Quebecois and they had immigrated to Armenia.
Ooh, like a fun flavor.
Oh, that's an interesting accent in your English.
Yeah. And speaking of inhabitants, another term that developed in parallel to Canadien was habitant, literally inhabitant. The various different kinds of settlers in New France earned a variety of different monikers. For example, the coureurs de bois, traders who operated outside the purview of colonial administration, voyageurs, who were licensed by the government to transport goods between trading posts, engagés, who were contracted immigrant workers, and other names based around vocations and social roles. The term habitant originally held a specific meaning, that being an independent landowner running a farm or homestead. However, this definition shifted over time. And here's a quote from the Encyclopedia Britannica.
At the end of the 18th century, the term habitant applied to all of those who inhabited rural areas and made a living working the land, even if they did not own it. In the 20th century, habitant took on a negative connotation and referred to someone who lacked the fashionable manners of urbanites.
So it's like a bit of almost redneck connotation.
Right, yeah. Yeah, French rednecks.
I didn't see other sources mention any negative connotations, but on the subject of urban-rural divide, as Roque Carrier highlights in his biography of Richard, The early 20th century saw a significant migration from the impoverished Quebec countryside to the cities, including Maurice Richard's parents. And things weren't much better in Montreal. When Richard is born in 1921, the unemployment rate in the city was over 26%.
Good God.
These are also numbers from his book. They were very hard to verify because municipal unemployment is like, I couldn't find that on StatsCan. But according to him, the figure did improve over the 1920s, but, you know, the Depression happened, so it shot up from 22.8% in 1930 to 31% in 1932.
Yeesh, that's not good.
No. Anyway, you slice things economically, things were not great in the city or Quebec generally.
All right. I had no idea that Quebec went through such an era of poverty.
Yeah, so this is kind of a bit of a preamble to the Quiet Revolution stuff they have in the 60s and the FLQ specifically.
That I know a little bit about, but not a ton.
Yeah, that's on a platter to the side for now, but it's all very tied in.
Okay.
So to whatever extent Habitant may have had pastoral connections, a lot of those migrants would have brought the identity to the city with them. Now, the city itself has long had a cosmopolitan character with a strong bilingual presence, as reflected in the situation in 1909, when the Canadian Hockey Association and the National Hockey Association both formed, each with at least one Anglophone and one Francophone team in Montreal. The CHA emerged from a meeting of something called the Eastern Canadian Hockey Association. Three of its owners wanted the fourth one out, so when they held a meeting to discuss, among other things, expansion, they voted to disband the ECHA and reform as the CHA at the deliberate exclusion of the team they hated, the Montreal Wanderers, which is just a pro move.
Nice, nice.
I do love old-timey sports in this area for just the sheer ownership shenanigans.
We don't get that too much anymore. Like, the last real last gasp of, like, owner bullshit was that weird NFL contender that Donald Trump, way before he became president, owned a team on and promptly collapsed.
Was that the XFL or a different one?
No, there was one before the XFL. I want to say it was the AFL or something like that. I have no idea. But yeah, he ended up collapsing the entire league and it wasn't worth shit by the time he was done with it. Like, his whole plan was to start this league and then sue the NFL in an antitrust lawsuit. And he won. But he won $1 or something like that, and it completely bankrupted the league.
Weird. So in this reformed league, the other local team, the Montreal Shamrocks, were joined by two new ones in the city, the similarly Anglophone All Montreal Hockey Club and the Francophone Le National, referred to in English as the Nationals, who are noteworthy as the first ever French-Canadian hockey club.
The other ones weren't French-Canadian?
No, so the Shamrocks were... like founded by Irish guys.
Irish Republicans.
I mean, yeah, even at this time, just Irish Quebecers. It's actually quite a thing. It's going to come up a lot in this.
All right.
Yeah, this might be surprising to people with a general understanding of hockey in the late 20th century, but in this period, Francophones were not associated with success in the sport. In his book, Roch Carrier writes, French Canadians came late to the sport. And he further says,
at the end of the 19th century, there were no French Canadians in a senior level team. This fact led to a journalist from La Presse to launch Cri de la Cour. We must demonstrate that in sports, as in all other branches of human activity, French Canadians are not inferior to the other races. I am of the French Canadian race.
Yeah, there might be a little bit of leeway for translation here.
Sure,
like,
sure.
Maybe it has a different connotation, but yeah, no, this kind of phrasing is going to come up.
That's not surprising. I wish I wasn't surprised by this shit anymore.
Jimmy Gardner, Anglophone player-owner for the Wanderers, was left reeling by the betrayal of the other club. So he's the one that they basically just like bullied out.
Yeah.
He turned to the representative of a team out of Renfrew, Ontario, who had just been rejected for accession and expansion to the new reformed league. The Creamery Kings, presumably named after their favorite Pornhub channel.
I hate to be the goalie on the cream pie team.
We got to bring back the Creamery Kings. That's what I think.
I mean, we have the Wheat Kings still.
They love to do that. There were Silver Kings in this league too, and you know, we have Oil Kings.
Yeah.
But, you know, return to Creamery King.
That's what the Utah hockey team's name should be.
Yes. Their jerseys are kind of creamy blue.
Yeah, I mean, and whatever, it's better than the no name that they have. Congratulations. You're either going to pick a name or you're the Cream Pie Gang.
Oh god, yes, they'd have so many good nicknames.
Should have been the Stormin' Mormons.
Oh, that would have been good too.
The Super Soakers.
Yeah. That's great. All right, where were we? The representative of the Creamery Kings, Ambrose O'Brien, was also an Anglophone, but Gardner's plan was for O'Brien to form a new Francophone team in the city, and together they'd form their own league, blackjack, hookers, etc. But crucially, a league that would be able to recreate the intramunicipal cultural-linguistic rivalry that the CHA was promising. Out of this, the NHA, predecessor to today's NHL, was founded, bringing with it this newly founded franchise, Les Canadiens. Only 4 games into their inaugural season, meanwhile, the CHA collapsed with 2 of its teams, the Shamrocks and the Ottawa Senators, amalgamated into the NHA. The owners of Le National were offered control of the fledgling Canadiens, but they declined, opting to take their club back to the amateur circuit, leaving this new team as the only game in town for professional Francophone hockey.
The only mistake was bringing the Ottawa Senators back.
It's interesting because the Ottawa Senators like recognize that old incarnation like 80, 90 years earlier as like they're like, yeah, we'll hang their banners.
Well, it's the only way they're going to have any banners showing success.
Yeah. But not my team. Not my problem.
Yep.
So that Francophone game was not off to a great start, with the team finishing last in what shook out as a 7-team league, ending up with a record of 2 wins and 10 losses. The Anglophone Wanderers, by contrast, finished first with a record of 11-1 and won the Stanley Cup for the 4th time in 5 years. The Canadiens would have the last laugh, though. Over the next 8 seasons, the Wanderers would finish 7 of them without a winning record, including their disastrous 1917-18 effort in which they started out at 1-3 before their arena burned down and they were forced to fold forever.
Oh yeah, they call that the Phoenix County's treatment.
Now, what's different here, what's noteworthy here, is that this was the arena for both teams. Both teams in Montreal, and all of them lost their equipment in the fire. But as we know, the French club ended up being more resilient, finding a new venue, new gear, and the Wanderers tapped out. They were $30,000 in debt.
We have to fold our professional hockey team. We owe the equivalent of a slightly used Prius in debt.
Yeah, well, that's like...
I'm sure with inflation, it's like millions of dollars.
It's a lot, yeah. With that fun little ending as the Canadiens stand alone here, I think that's the end of part one. Joe, do you have anything you want to plug? Thanks for coming on.
Oh, yeah. I'm the host of the Lions Led by Donkeys podcast. We talk about history, military history, and all sorts of other insanity throughout other forms of history. We have regular episodes every Monday, and we have a whole bunch of bonus episodes on our Patreon.
Fantastic. And yeah, you can find us as Canuck as a Slur on all platforms, and you can find us both in audio and video form. We're on YouTube, we're on all of your podcast apps, and hop in our link tree. It's at the bottom in the description. It'll link you to everything, including our Discord. You can join it for free. Come and do your aesthetics mock-ups of Creamery Kings jersey, and yeah, we'll see you next week. Joe, do you want to say the sign-off that we have the guests say? It is Je m'en calisse.
Jamal Kalis.
Canuck is a Slur is an independent collaborative effort to present a critical, progressive perspective on Canadian history and culture. Drop bomb. To make consistent, high-quality content, we need your support. Let's tangle. Head on over to patreon.com/CanuckIsASlur to sign up. Beauty. If you're still on the fence, well, here's the sales pitch. Patrons at the good old Canadian boy level unlock expanded access to our Discord server, including sneak peeks at upcoming episodes. Let's go! Patrons at the good old Ontario boy level will also get into our archive of bonus content, which includes an extra episode every month. Patrons at the good old Kingston boy level get to commission a free piece of bad art every month as well, in addition to further special Discord privileges.
Oh, how she loves the Stanley Cup. Hockey man is what I am. Let's go! Listen to what I say. Play that game the Canadian way. Hockey man is what I am. Let's go!
We'd love for you to come and follow us on our various socials, which you can find linked in the episode description. You can also see any further links for our guests and co-hosts there as well. The creators of this work would like to acknowledge the Indigenous peoples across the continent that had their homes stolen, land broken up by arbitrary borders, cultures suppressed, languages banned, children kidnapped, and who were subjected to many other forms of colonial violence. We also acknowledge the many treaties broken and still unceded territories across Turtle Island. Thanks for listening, eat the rich, and happy trails to you.